Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schleinkofer. Civil Defense Radio is more than just a podcast about a new American civil defense structure. Through our total media presence, our website, Facebook, and Twitter pages, we work to inform you of the many serious threats, both natural and man-made, that our nation faces. Those issues many news outlets are afraid to speak about or unwilling to mention. We believe this total information approach will assist you in making the best possible decisions about your safety and security for yourself, your family, your neighborhood, and community during disastrous events. Civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and we want to be part of your preparation. We strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. We offer guidance on our website at civildefenseradio.com under the Resources tab. Look for the guide at the top of the page. It is enough information to get the discussion started. And as always, we are here to help. We ask that you regularly download and listen to our shows and visit our web and social media platforms often at civildefenseradio.com, on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio, and on Twitter at civil_def_radio. Now, let's get on with our show. Today we have Jonathan and Kylene Jones. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio, guys.
Thank you so much.
It's great to be here, Preston. Thank you for having us.
Yes, you guys are the husband and wife team behind the sensational book, The Provident Prepper, which is an apropos name. And my research has shown that that is a highly acclaimed and highly marked up, you know, fours and fives on Amazon. So congratulations and job well done.
Thank you.
You also have a great web presence on YouTube and your blog site. Your website is
theprovidentprepper.org.
I'd like to ask you guys to give us a little background information on each one of you. So if you would, whoever wants to start first.
Okay, well, I will start off here. My experience started back in the 80s. I was a young father, just going along with life, and kind of woke up one day and said, you know, hold on here. What happens if something critical happens and I can't take care of my family? And I guess that's what it took, is being married and having a couple of young children and realizing that I hadn't really even thought about some of the possibilities, some of the things that might happen and how I could respond to those. And that started my journey, which has been an amazing and fun journey of self-reliance and learning and research and doing whatever I could do to make sure that I could take care of my family in the event that a crisis occurred.
And my journey was just a little bit different. So Jonathan started a long time before I did. And when we got married, I knew nothing about his involvement with civil defense. And then a few months later, he said, sweetheart, I would really like it if you'd go to this meeting with me. And I'm thinking, uh-oh. He's like, there's some people I like to meet with in Salt Lake, and the group's kind of unique, but I would really like for you to participate with me. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, what did I marry? So we go to this meeting. It was a civil defense volunteers meeting up in Salt Lake, and the people were incredible. And it was so fun because you have a whole variety of personalities, but the one thing that unifies everyone is the fact that they want to be prepared to take care of themselves and others no matter what happens. And so it was really fun to get involved in this group. And then before I knew it, we were writing articles for TACDA. We were invited to be on the advisory board, and then we were on the board of directors, and I became the editor for the Journal of Civil Defense, which is a fantastic magazine that they put out twice a year. And it is actually available free online for anybody who wants to access it. But through this journey, I started being the hands-on. John, who's an engineer, still had to go to work every day and do his thing. But I was on the home front. And so we started experimenting at home and trying to do everything that I could to make our family as self-reliant and prepared as we could. And we had a lot of really great adventures, some tough ones, like when we turned our power out, I was not a nice person during that time.
Yeah.
I get very cold and cranky. But so our journey has definitely been a journey, and I don't think there's any destination. But we really came to feel that we had a mission to help other people prepare, because no matter how well prepared our family is, if our community is not prepared, we aren't prepared.
I agree. It takes more than just an individual or family to be prepared. It takes a community. That's how our forefathers survived. It's, you know, they landed at Plymouth Rock and they had a community that they were part of right from the beginning, and they were able to grow and survive from there. You know, all through history, if you look back, it's communities that survive. It's not the lone ranger out there on the plains. You know, sure, they were connected to a community, but sometimes you got to be away from the community. But when things go bad, you have to coalesce and come together.
You are exactly right. Yeah.
So what I'd like to do next is talk about your highly rated Amazon bestseller here. I'm calling it a bestseller. I'm not sure if it is. With the kind of reviews that you guys got on this book, how could it not be a bestseller?
Thank you.
One reviewer, Bruce Curley, back in 2014, he gave a lengthy review. And this thing is 2, 4, 6, 7 pages long. But I just want to read a couple. It looks like you have 23 chapters in your book, and it's not a small book. It's not something that you would put in your pocket, right?
Right, it is not.
What he says here about chapter one is, as the authors say in chapter one, where do I begin? While prepping is important, we recommend that you always strive to keep balance in life. Do not allow fear to motivate your actions. Preparing and making steady progress is critically important, but take time to enjoy the present while preparing for the future. That common sense approach is why this book matters. And I thought that was a money statement right there.
Well, thank you.
His review. Go ahead, Kylene. I hear you want to
say. You
know
what? Yeah, Bruce Curley is amazing. He is actively involved in the American Civil Defense Association. And so a review of this type from Bruce is a high honor for us, because he knows what he's doing. He knows what he's talking about. And so that it just warms my heart, because he is really a good advocate of ours, and he's standing for the same principles.
Yeah, I've noticed, I think I ran across his blog once while I was looking around for different things, and I came across it, and he does some pretty good stuff too.
Yeah.
Yeah. For chapter 21, which is kind of where I want to go with today, because that's the whole idea of civil defense, which is community. Chapter 21 is community. Here's what he wrote. Community, we're all in this together, opens with the line, no matter how we prepare for possible hazards, if our community is not prepared, we are in trouble. This is a core value of all prepping, and one that bothers me the most about many preppers' websites, blogs, forums, and preppers themselves. Many preppers posit that they are totally self-sufficient. This is impossible. You are connected. We make it or fail individually, but also as part of a family, group, church, army, corporation, or nation. Kylene and Jonathan recognize this truth by quoting John Donne's famous line, no man is an island, and then prove it. The benefits of the group might mean the difference between life and death, they state. Having just this month depended on state police, first responders, nurses, doctors, technicians, and others to keep my 18-year-old Eamon alive when he went from a horrible accident to an intensive care unit, I would have to agree. So it does. We don't have enough skills to survive individually or even as a small group. We got to have multiple skill sets. And I don't care how strong you learn or strive to learn, you're going to be missing something. You know, if you have just 5 or 6 people, you're not going to have enough skill set to overcome many of the major hurdles.
And that is true. That is very true. And, you know, our approach, getting back to what we talked just a minute ago, is, you know, we've all got very busy lives. Most of us, this is not something that we can just do night and day. This is something that we do. It's like our life is a pie, and we're not asking for half that pie. We're asking for a thin slice where we all work together. And as we come together as communities and we're all joined into these goals of helping each other, none of us has to do this full time. We all have other important things, a lot of important things in life to do. But this is a significant piece that just needs a little slice of our time.
Yes, yes, you're right.
And I look at just our neighborhood and those around us, because, and we do live in the country, so this is very different than a city life, but everybody's here kind of to help each other out. We have a few outliers and a few people you have to watch. There's all those dangerous ones in every crowd.
Yeah.
There is.
Oh, yeah.
That's just a reality.
Yeah.
But for the most part, as we work together, you know, we have firemen here, we have policemen, we have construction workers, we have engineers, we have just about everything that you could need to survive. Well, and you have a mom, and the moms, you know, we're the ones that make the world go round and cook the food and know what to do with the food storage. But it's very interesting as we try to practice on a much smaller scale, living as a good community and being good neighbors and sharing what we have and helping each other become just a little bit better, the difference that we can make. And I watch that and I think, you know, if something really bad happened in our community, we would take care of each other, and we know each other well enough to be able to do that. It's important to get to know your neighbors. In our society, we don't do that much lately.
You're right.
Everybody is all fenced off, and sometimes, you know, there is good reason for that, but we do need to reach out a little bit and build those relationships now so that in the future they will be established and we'll be able to take advantage of those. Jonathan and I have done a few different things to help our immediate community. A few years ago, we did a group order of fruit trees. And ordered hundreds of fruit trees from a commercial nursery, and they were only like $10 a piece. And our goal was to have hundreds of more fruit trees planted so that when something happens, these trees can be providing for everybody.
Yeah.
So we don't have to do it all. And so there's all kinds of different opportunities to reach out and help each other. And some of them might be a little bit unique, and some you might not think about right away.
That's a good idea. You know, so now your neighbors out there, they have fruit trees that they didn't think about getting, right?
Yes, very inexpensively, so there were no excuses. And we're watching them grow up now, because that was like 3 or 4 years ago. So, you know, I see, look at their yard, look at those trees are growing, and it just makes me happy.
Well, that's great. What I want to get into next is about the American Civil Defense Association and your guys' role in that. But first, let's take a quick commercial break. Hello, friends. Please allow me to speak with you about something you may want to add to your regular health maintenance routine, as well as your preparedness supplies. A few years ago, I came across an article in a preparedness magazine that caught my attention. My wife and I have always been health conscious, and we have taken various supplements over the years. However, this article introduced us to the world of essential oils. My wife began researching to find a reputable company with high-quality products. What she found was a company that we have been with now for about 4 years, using their products, many of them daily. The company is doTERRA, and their products are certified pure, therapeutic-grade essential oils. Essential oils come in all grades on the scale, but doTERRA oils are, in our opinion, at the top. Sure, you can go to Walmart or any local pharmacy and purchase essential oils, but not many of them are recommended for internal use. Many of our oils can be used internally, topically, diffused for their aromatic fragrance and health benefits. Some of our favorites we use almost daily are lemon, clove, frankincense, lavender, En Garde blend, peppermint, and melaleuca, also known as tea tree oil. These oils have become our go-to remedy to manage our health throughout the year. In fact, we credit our oils for our overall good health. You can too. Just visit our website at oilsforlifetoday.com, oils4lifetoday.com, and explore the world of certified pure therapeutic grade oils for yourself. And we're back with Jonathan and Kylene, the Provident Preppers. Before we took the break, we were going to talk a little bit about your involvement with the American Civil Defense Association, otherwise known as TACDA.
Correct, yes. TACDA, let me just read the TACDA mission statement. The mission of the American Civil Defense Association, or TACDA, is to provide education, products, and resources that empower American citizens with a comprehensive understanding of reasonable preparation strategies and techniques, promoting a self-reliant, proactive approach to protecting themselves, their families, and their communities in the event of nuclear, biological, chemical, or other man-made or natural disasters. And that pretty well sums it up. The goal of TACDA, it's not associated with the government or any other organization. It was founded in 1962 in response to the Cuban Missile Crisis and the Cold War was coming on. This was formed to help people become educated, to understand the threats, and to understand that we can do things about those threats.
And you guys essentially took over the civil defense mission from the U.S. government, correct?
Yeah, a lot of information was available. A lot of that information was pulled in to be used, and then a lot of additional information was developed. Like I said, all in an effort to help people. You know, 1962, for those that remember, I don't, but I've looked at some of the history, Cuban Missile Crisis, John F. Kennedy was president, and he was an advocate for civil defense because of the Russian threat and because of other threats. He advocated for civil defense, and then, of course, he was assassinated in 1963, and that emphasis kind of fell by the wayside. But for that brief period of time, there was a lot of action towards, okay, what can we do to help our citizens? What can we do to make bring peace of mind and to help people understand the threat and how to respond to it? Now, I think there's always a balancing that goes on when you're dealing with government because they don't want to alarm the people. But how do you get the message out that, yes, there are some things that we as a government are doing and as communities should be doing, but there's things that we as individuals need to step up and take responsibility for?
Yes, that's so important, your last statement there about we as individuals and families.
Yeah, we have a responsibility to be self-reliant, to be able to provide for ourselves and our families and our neighbors when possible. And then the government can come in and do what they can, but it all starts with us, right? We have to be part of the solution and not part of the problem.
Yes. Well, Hurricane Harvey, when it hit Houston, the people rallied. And, you know, with typical Texas flair, you know, Texans are very special. You know, I say that I got old in Texas and, you know, I love that place and the people. They rallied to help their neighbors, and it was just such a moving experience to watch that from afar. But they did really well in the absence of government and the absence of training and organization, which a civil defense organization for that city and county in the area would have been able to respond much quicker and more effectively, don't you believe?
Precisely, yes.
I think it's really interesting because in Katrina, we have the news report, all these horrible things that happened and how
yeah.
Society is horrible and all that. But I had collected stories from different people at that time. And one of them said, you know, I had never seen our neighborhood come together like this. And they were down a little bit, right? But their electricity was still off for a few weeks and it was very hot. And she said, everybody came out to their porches. We got to know our neighbors like never before. We traded. If somebody needed baby formula or diapers, somebody else would share it. And they all took care of each other. She said one of the saddest things that happened was the power came back on and we went back to living our isolated lives.
Oh, no. So essentially they learned nothing.
But that wasn't reported in the news. I believe that people... we are good people. There are so many of us that will rally together and do the right thing, and that the things that you see happen in Katrina, that those are not the norm. What they reported, yes, it totally happened, but that is not what we want to be and who we really are, and we can do better than that.
Yes. There's a book, I can't remember the name of it, but it was about the Memorial Hospital in New Orleans and the time that they spent in there and the things that happened because of the flooding and all that. And it's heartbreaking, some of the things that happened and the lack of leadership it's horrible.
Yeah.
There are good stories and there are bad stories, and then there are those ones that you wish you never heard about. And some of the things that happened in Memorial was that last category. You wish you didn't hear about them.
And so we take those stories and we learn from them. And we make sure that when something happens, any place where we're involved, that we make the difference. And the world is better because we're here, we're prepared, and we're ready to help.
And that's why you guys do what you do, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. You know, my wife, she understands now that this is my mission. And this is what I'm called to do, because it's something that I believe so firmly in, that we need to get back to a civil defense mindset. You know, FEMA says we should develop a preparedness mindset. Well, the only way we can do that is through organizing, training, and working together to do that, because we can't do it. Matter of fact, government's not doing it. The city and the counties aren't doing it. The state's not promoting it. And FEMA, they talk a big game, but they don't do anything to promote local resiliency. Their idea of resiliency is helping businesses get back on their feet, which is important. But government having their continuity of operations, that's important. But what about continuity of community?
Yes.
That's where my experience being a continuity of operations member for my former federal law enforcement job, I realized that, you know, wait a minute, I got this golden ticket to the secret location, but my wife doesn't, and neither do my neighbors. So, you know, I started searching for the answer, and the answer is civil defense, but not the old kind of civil defense where it was singularly focused on a nuclear exchange with Soviets, you know, former Soviet Union, but a new threat from Russia, from China, from North Korea, from Iran, and terrorism. And we've got internal threats as well. We've got people that are attacking innocent people and violating their civil rights of free speech. And that is a threat to our nation.
It certainly is. We do have some threats. And I think kind of going along with this, one of the important things is for people to recognize that there are threats. It's very interesting as we interact with community and with other people. There are a lot of people that fit in either a camp of, well, nothing bad will ever happen. And it's surprising how many there are.
I know.
Just really don't believe anything bad could ever happen. And others that say, well, if it ever did, you know, just let me die. You know, I'll be the first to go because, but the truth is, in the middle, most of us are going to live through whatever.
Exactly.
And if we can be prepared to help each other, oh, how much better the world is.
Oh, yeah. And if it's something that lasts for a long time, you're going to, sure, you're not going to like the situation, but at least you're alive and you're making some kind of progress. You might be living like the pilgrims, or it's better than the alternative, being a victim. And that's not what I want to do.
Right now, we started a 90-day challenge 2.5 weeks ago, where we are living solely off of our food storage and what we can produce in our own garden.
Cool.
Because we really believe that everyone should have a 3-month supply of foods that they eat every day, as well as a long-term food supply that could really provide the calories and nutrition for an extended period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we've been living this life for a long time, but we've never said, no store for 3 months. We're not going to do it. We are just going to live off what we can do. It is surprising what we have already learned in this first couple of weeks. And you said, yeah, we might be living like the pilgrims or the pioneers, and we might not like it. And we're already getting to that point. We thought we were really prepared, but we're already running out of a few key things. Like this morning, it was, I was making homemade muffins, and it was just the spray oil that you spray on the cupcake pan. Or the cupcake tins, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, I am going to have to grease these muffin tins for the next 3 months.
The old way.
You know, it's the old way.
Yeah.
We're learning just all these little things, and our crops, instead of if we waste something or something isn't harvested on time, it's okay. We got plenty of backup. Now that harvest is really critical to our survival. Well, I shouldn't say survival. We'll live through this. We have plenty of food to live through this. But it's the comfort.
Yeah. Yeah, but it also shows you weaknesses in your plan. and and vulnerabilities that you hadn't necessarily known before. I look forward to reading about your experience with this in your guys' posts.
We would love, we'll be sharing it every week on YouTube too.
Okay.
And it's mostly from our kids' perspective, which is, you know, we have two teenage 16-year-old girls, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah.
We're getting a little bit of pushback here.
I bet. Yeah. We've got 5 granddaughters.
Yeah?
Yeah. The oldest is 20, and the youngest is right around 12. And so, yeah. Yeah, it's...
But it's funny to watch how resourceful they're getting, because one of our daughters, her big things, we don't have yogurt now and we don't have ice cream, and she's freaking out about that. But she ended up going to one of the neighbors and saying, can I milk your goat so that I can have milk to make yogurt? Okay, she never, I mean, she milked for them before when they went on vacation a few times, but she would have never done this without this challenge. And then our son contacted somebody else and said, hey, can I come milk your cow once a week? I'll trade you raspberries, right? And I'm like, I didn't initiate any of this. But these kids are learning to be resourceful because of the situation that they've been placed in. And I think when it happens to all of us, we're going to learn to be more resourceful. And we're going to learn to share more where we don't share as much now.
It's a bartering. And, you know, and that's why it takes a community. Because, you know, you may have something break and you need somebody to come over and fix it. Well, thanks for fixing it. Here's a bushel of corn or something, you know, and, you know, they're happy, you're happy, and everybody's working together. So, no, that's great. And community is so, so important. You know, I promote all the time that it takes family, neighborhood, community, and that building block. On my website, under the About Us page, it has a graphic from the 1950s, and it shows individual, family, neighborhood, community in the inner circle. And that is where it all happens. We shouldn't rely on anybody coming to help us. We should rely first on family, neighborhood, community. And that's the bottom line.
Absolutely. You're right on.
Yeah.
And that's how largely our forebears, that's how they existed and thrived. And that is one of the big differences that I see between us and the people 100 years ago or 150 years ago, is that was their life. They were used to that life. You know, if something happened, they knew how to do the garden. They knew they lived in agricultural areas. Most people did.
Yeah.
And they knew how to do these things. We live in a very spoiled society, if I can say that.
I would.
Where everything is kind of provided for us. And if that ever goes away, we're in a much worse position than our forebears.
Yes. Now, can you, in the next 2 minutes, can you talk about your planning documents that you have under your website?
So when we created our book, we had originally included these action plans. So at the end of every chapter, you had an action plan. You were given the information in the chapter, and then you needed to take it and apply it to your family and create your plan, decide what it was you were going to do so you could get busy and accomplish it. And then our publisher said, there's no way we have enough room in there. So on our website, we have all those action plans. So it's free to anybody that you just go to our website, and one of the top tabs, it says action plans, and you can get anyone from our book. And it's a starting place because everybody is so different. But when you start looking at, for instance, water storage and purification, you've got an action plan there. It'll say, okay, do you have this, this, this? You might want to consider this. How many people do you have? You know, it just goes over everything that you need to know. One of the big things that we've found with evacuation is these people plan, and they have this 72-hour kit, which is not enough time, but they have a 72-hour kit, and it's all packed, but they have no idea where they're going. How can you pack for a destination that you don't know? You've got to know.
Good point.
You have to have planned in advance where your destination is, and you might have to have a couple different alternatives depending on the scenario, but that place needs to be ready to accept you and care for you, because once you leave home, you're a refugee. That is a very dangerous status.
That's a victim status.
It is a victim status. That should be something that happens when all of our plans are exhausted, we need to plan and set things in place so that we can be self-reliant and we can take care of ourselves. But those action plans are a fantastic way for you to get started in preparing for each of the different categories that were in our book.
And if I can just kind of pipe in here just a little bit, you know, for most people, the thought of preparedness, I think it's a little overwhelming. And part of the emphasis of these action plans is to break things down. We have to do that. We have to break it in small pieces and tackle it a piece at a time, or people become overwhelmed. And I talk to people that say that, you know, it's too overwhelming. And so these action plans are a way to physically and emotionally break this down into small pieces that we can say, okay, we can work on this. We'll work on this and we'll work on this. And you kind of prioritize that and you can work your way through to a place where, okay, this isn't so overwhelming, but it seems like it up front without breaking it down.
Yeah. You know, it's easier to take one step at a time than to try and run headlong into something that you're not totally sure what to do or how to do it. And those action plans, I really like those action plans. Being a retired military guy, I know about action plans. So that's good.
Well, there's good purpose in them.
Yes. Yes. There's great utility there. And you don't have to leave it at what you've prepared. Somebody can take it and add to it and make it even more all-encompassing for their situation.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we've reached the end of our time here. I really, really appreciate you guys being on the show today. To my friends out there, my listeners, the top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based, grassroots approach to solve this problem of resiliency. We are looking for volunteers throughout the nation to pick up the mantle of civil defense for their communities. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at our website, civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings on our Facebook page at Civil Defense Radio and on Twitter at civil_def_radio. Where we post information about the many threats we see to our nation and our security. I wish to thank Jonathan and Kylene again for being on the show, and I'd like to thank you, my friends and listeners. I really appreciate you being on the show today. So please, be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.